Hello and welcome to a belated, as usual, just too many games, lads and girls, if there's any of you, Copcast podcast. We're coming to you after Manchester United 4, Liverpool 3, after extra time. Don't really care. We'll talk about it for a bit, but there are, as they say, bigger fish to fry. And we're going to look at where we are with a bit of an overall view and discuss a number of different bits and pieces. And to do that, I've got Neil Patterson in Donegal, just after Paddy's Day. I've got Jay Reid with a leaking shower and a missus that's defo, not a plumber. And I've got Beryl Agus, the shooting machine over in the Netherlands. Beryl, just a bit of context here, right? We've played 5 more games since United since the start of January, and it sort of told, certainly towards the end of extra time, but ultimately, you know, as everybody said, we've only got ourselves to blame. In my opinion, we lost that game twice. And the dominance in the second half, yeah, they start well. But then, bang, bang, we're all clinical sales at the end of the first half. And it's 2-1. It's like, okay, normal service resumed. And we come out. And it is like a training game. It's too easy. And I think that literally is the thing. It's too easy. And it felt, whether you want to call it confidence, arrogance, just, you know, being lulled into a false sense of security. Oh, we'll score the next one. And actually what happened is that they scored the next one and everything seemed to fall apart from there.
Yeah, and it fell apart twice even, yeah, as you mentioned. Yeah, it's a remarkable season, of course. We talked about how we progressed and how the young players and the new players, how they were able to integrate. And we were fresh from, you know, the slapping around the other Manx without beating them. And maybe that's why we thought after, I was glad we equalized and then we even scored, took the lead. And maybe that, you know, gave us the feeling that we were once again invincible and, you know, whatever would happen would happen. But in the end, we would be the winners and nothing else could happen. So something like that, it seemed. While watching the game we were chatting in our group chat, and it was saying things like, maybe I was just chatting in my head, but yeah, if you don't kill them off, you know, all of this dominance that has to lead to chances and to goals, and it didn't. You can get sucker punched, and you know, they score this ridiculous goal in the sense that it's a good goal in the end, but the one who scores it is a clown. The way that the ball gets there, it's a procession of random things happening, and the ball ends up in the feet of that clown, and he with his, you know, very long clown shoes, he manages to score the equalizer just before the game ends, the 90 minutes, and it's, yeah, I don't exactly know what happened, of course, but all of the things that you said, a bit of complacency, a bit of tiredness, all of those things probably played a role. And the only thing we can do is just draw our conclusions and see this as a lesson, because we've got lots more to do that's far more important than this game.
Yeah, and it's true. And Jay, like it felt to me like one of, certainly up until like probably 75, 80 minutes, one of those games where it was just like, look at us. We just went there and we figured it out. They were tearing us to shreds down our right-hand side for probably the first 20, 25 minutes. All of the danger was coming down that side. You know, it was obvious to see why. Gomez is coming inside a little bit. Sabathia's obviously got license to roam forward and have a bit more freedom in terms of his positioning. And I think it would be remiss of us to say that he does not look like physically fit. You know, certainly in terms of what we've seen from him in the past. At points I saw him literally walking after, you know, United got in behind him and started to attack that right back area. But we figure it out. We make our changes. We get in 2-1. We come out the second half. We sort it. And from there, we should go on to win the game. But I think, you know, the 5v2 that everybody's talking about, it's the second half in a microcosm because we have so many opportunities like that. You know, the other kind of snapshot is just Szoboszlai in the entire third of the pitch by himself with the ball, like charge of the fucking light brigade. And you look at that and think, like, how do we not score from there and if mine create a decent chance? And that was the running theme of the second half. It I think you said pre-pod, you start this kind of perpetuating prophecy comes to fruition where, of course, we're going to waste all of these opportunities and chances to create opportunities, and they're just going to nick some scruffy, scrappy, horrible goal at the end, and all of a sudden, bang, we're back to square one again, and that's what happened.
You kind of just, you know, you've nailed it in terms of like the summary of what happened, and it did kind of feel as though, we get ourselves back into it after. Yeah, you know, a scruffy first half hour and whatever. But then you kind of feel you go in 2-1, right? You come out second half and you control the game, which we did. You take your goal, you win 3-1, you walk out of there and everything's hunky-dory. But it kind of felt as though we took it, you know, far too easy and far too complacent in terms of, yeah, we'll just do this and we'll just find a way to get a goal. And we created so many decent opportunities for ourselves, and you know, we could have took that game at any time between, you know, the 46th minute and like the 80th minute. But away from home, in what is probably their cup final, because if they do make the cup final, they'll get swatted by City anyway, because everyone expects them to do Chelsea as well. So, you know, that was their cup final there, and they needed something. And the longer it went, you just thought, you know, they're going to eventually create something of some sort, you know, whether it was lumping it up to Maguire's head or, you know hit it over the top for Garnacho or Rashford, and that lad could have had a hat-trick on a day. But it was just a sense of inevitability. Even though they are so bad, it's still United, it's still Old Trafford, and you know, we've seen this story all through our lives, and it was needless, and we allowed it to happen, which improbably is the reason why, actually, coming away from the game, your initial reaction is anger and frustration, because we've just threw away a potential opportunity to get ourselves another trophy there quite easily. But then actually you think, well, you know what, we've wasted it, but we wasted it on ourselves. Like, it was our own fault. We beat ourselves on Sunday afternoon. And if there was a game to lose between now and the end of the season, this was the one. You know, like, we're going to look ahead to what's to come, but we cannot afford to lose another league game. You know, you can get by in the Europa League, maybe with a defeat in one leg of a two-legged game, but ideally you want to come through the Europa League unbeaten all the way to the end and clean that one up as well. So, you know, I suppose if you are going to bark a bad day down at the office, then last week was the one to do it. And also going into an international break, lads can go away, clear the mind. Coaching team and manager can have a bit of a reset over this period now, and then we come back and, you know, the old Steven Gerrard line is, we go again, and we literally have to.
Yeah, Chief, I think, you know, just to build on Jay's point there, he's right. I think it's absurd to say that an FA Cup quarterfinal against our biggest historic rivals at their place, where you should win the game and step into what seems a relatively straightforward FA Cup semi-final to set up a chance at yet another trophy, is our least important remaining game of the season. But that's kind of the way it is, which seems sad in terms of how people view the FA Cup, but in reality, that's where we are right now as a club. And I think to try and lean to the positives here, that needs to be taken as a lesson learned and maybe could look like a blessing in disguise. Klopp was clearly furious, like apoplectic. We've seen his response to the Danish, I think, journalist. He's probably just been asked too many questions. He's still seething inside. He's probably running situations through his head that occurred, getting angrier and angrier as players' indecision and poor decision-making and an inability to do the right things at the right time. And like I say, this could be a watershed moment in this season that propels us to greatness.
Yeah, I mean, greatness would have been winning yesterday and going on and winning all four. It could propel us to an excellent season. Let's hope that it is sort of a wake-up call, because I think there was a degree of complacency in there and a degree of exactly what Beryl said, no matter what. There can only be one result. We always win in the end, and the luck sort of ran out. But I think there is something to be said about an element of or a degree of fatigue as well, given the five extra games we've played and the fact we played on Thursday night in the Europa League as well, albeit in.
Chief, just to ask you this. They did to us what we've been doing to other teams all season. And do you think that might be just a little dose of realization that actually, if you're not on it, you're not invincible and other teams can do this to you as well?
No, totally. Totally, you have to be on it. And to be fair, I mean, they weren't particularly, but again, you can say that it is a big occasion. It is Old Trafford. Historically, we haven't had a great record there. Even last season, okay, it wasn't a good season, but sort of, you know, we managed to lose there, and they're awful last season as well, and they're worse this season. But the fact that they are Man United, we are Liverpool, and it's Old Trafford, still has a degree of something. Just like when they come to Anfield, you know, and we are not necessarily at our best. We can still get a result against them. So there's an element of that, but there was, you know, by all accounts, we had total control in the second half, and we were not clinical enough. We weren't smart enough. We didn't make the right decisions at key key moments, and we, you know, didn't capitalize on what was a significant advantage in possession and territory and in general control, and that's can be a problem for us. It isn't often. We usually do get the goals, but sometimes we have lived to regret a lack of being clinical, a lack of ruthlessness in that final moment. And you know, City playing the same game yesterday would have beaten them, and that isn't to say that I think City are a better team. But they are more methodical in those moments. They're less inclined to get swept away in the occasion, and they're less inclined to sort of not make that extra pass, if you know what I mean. Not sort of look for that extra gap. So it's just annoying. It's annoying that we've lost against them. It's annoying that we're out of a competition when I was really quite in on the quadruple, because why not? You know, we were really in prime position, getting players back and stuff, whatever. And it's, we've done so amazingly to get to that point, and just to throw in a defeat there, after all the games, all the injuries, all the scratch teams we've had to put out, and so on. So you are right. It is the one that you could afford to lose, but it still stings. It's still a kick in the balls. But yes, hopefully it's a wake-up call, and hopefully we do get our sort of professionalism back to its fullest extent, and we go on now and are rather machine-like in our execution of the goals we've set, which is to fucking win everything.
Yeah, well, not everything, but everything that's left.
Exactly.
yeah. So,
you know.
Yeah. So, Beryl, just moving on to everything that's left. Obviously, you know, the league title is the be-all and end-all this season. This is the dream. We currently sit Arsenal 64 points, goal difference of plus 46. Ourselves 64 points, goal difference of plus 39. City 63 points. Goal difference of plus 35. It's 1 point separate the top three. It's absurd. We knew it wasn't going to be like 100-plus season or probably close to that. And we'll probably find that that's not where we end up. You know, I don't know. What's the maximum points that any team can achieve this year? What is there, nine games left? That's another 27 points. You know, that's what, 93 maximum we're talking. Is that right? Yeah, that is right, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we all predicted this at the start of the season. And I think looking at games, you probably got to take these in clutches. But I think if you want to look at the next three games each, Let's look at the next two games. It's City of Arsenal at home. The following games are Arsenal have Luton at home and City have Villa at home. And we have Brighton and Hove Albion at home and Sheffield United at home. So, you know, we're the only team guaranteed to not lose. Well, yeah, guaranteed to not lose points. But there are certainly one of our two rivals are going to drop points in the next two games. And I don't know, I suppose in this scenario, where do your persuasions lie based on City and Arsenal? What result do you want and why?
Logic would say a draw would mean that they both drop points. I think the logically the optimal would be that they draw, but you know, there's something to say for City twatting Arsenal, because Arsenal have gotten really cocky after beating us, and let's not forget how they beat us. You know, we were I think it was 1-1 at the time. And we were just as against Man United, you know, we had started badly, but had managed to get ourselves into the game. And at 1-1, you know, I believe again, we were starting to take control of the game. And then, you know, I think two mistakes by mainly Virgil allowed them to win against us. And after that, they've scored lots of goals and have moved up the league table. So it might be good for them to be demoralized, especially because I think they expect to lose against City. They fancy themselves, but at the same time they know they last year they were really cocky going there, and then you know, nothing happened that they wanted. They were twitted. There is something to say for that being good, but at the same time, we don't want Man City to get too much momentum. So, Yeah, I think a draw would probably be the best. And if that happens, and we should win our games against Brighton and against the against Sheffield, and probably work on our goal difference against Sheffield as well, and maybe against Brighton as well, because you know Brighton haven't been you know defensively solid. Would be you know the opposite of what they are. So you know. We could be in a better position in 2 weeks' time, I would say. And that's how we should probably, you know, look at this, at the remaining games, just take them one by one. And yeah, and if you're on top by the end of that week, then you're one step closer to that league, you know, to winning that league. And that's as far as I am willing to go, because you know we all Chief mentioned the quadruple, and I think it may even be a blessing in disguise that we can't chase it anymore, because you know all of those games with an already a weakened squad, we did it last time until the last day, you know, both for the league and for the Champions League. And you saw what happened in the season after that. So yeah, let's just mainly focus on that league, especially because you know we will talk about the Europa League as well. But it seems less demanding than the Champions League would be.
Yeah, I think so. Jay. I'm kind of looking at the next two games, and I feel like the fixtures for certainly for us aren't massive, but I feel like this might be an opportunity for us to get our noses in front and just try and stay there. I would say our fixtures are probably slightly more favourable than the other two sides. Ever so slightly, we've got more home games as far as I can tell, and again one of the away games there is Man United, and I'd like to think that we go there and seek retribution for the weekend, but I'm curious to think what you know. Who do you fear more? Is it City or Arsenal in this run-in? City. And how does that... Is it City?
It's simple.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I'm going to be honest. I'm kind of sitting on the other side of the fence, and the reason is that City still remain to me fallible. Like, there's some fixtures there. I'm looking at Villa at home, and I'm thinking, fuck. Like, I can see City beating Villa at home. I'm looking at... who's the other one that stuck out for me?
Yeah, you know, City's fixtures here.
City's fixtures, Palace away, and I'm like, under the new manager, that's always been like a tricky place for them to go. And then they've Spurs away as well, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, if Arsenal beat City, they're in a sticky situation. There are two results behind us, provided we win our game at the weekend, and Arsenal seem to have been... I know people were Liverpool fans were celebrating the fact that Arsenal had got through the next round of the Champions League. But honestly, I think this Arsenal team are looking for like fixtures to mentally galvanize them the way we've gone through that journey. And
I'm of a complete opposite idea to yourself. In the fact that You mentioned City's fixtures, and I think if they get past Arsenal with a victory, you may be only potentially looking at Spurs where they could drop points, because they are so good in the second half of the season. And on the flip side about Arsenal, I just look at the game against Porto, you know, the two games, it was 1-0 either way. You know, they come up against a side who were pretty diligent, pretty organised, pretty... you know, savvy in terms of European football, which is not what your Arsenal have been in recent years. And then going up against Bayern Munich in the next round, who is, you know, like supercharged what Porto did and can do it because they've got the quality as well to put goals in the back of the net. And they proved over them two games that, you know, when they come up against teams that aren't Nottingham Forest or Burnley or Sheffield United, which they've steamrolled in the last few weeks and makes their record look so much better than what it's been because they've had such a cushy run. You know, they can become a bit unstuck and they will get dragged in to the attention, the allure of the Champions League, I think, because it's Bayern Munich, because it's Harry Kane, because of the Tottenham story. You know, those games will occupy a lot for them. And I'm not entirely sure on the fixtures either side of them who they play. I think it's Brighton away and Villa at home. So, you know, the potential there where Arsenal could slip up. For me, I would rather Arsenal win the game at City because I do think City will then just go on a relentless run regardless. So at least it takes points off City. And I do think Arsenal, across the back end of the season, have got, you know, banana skins in them because, as I've mentioned there, you know, Brighton and Villa on the day can be very tricky games. They've still got to go to Spurs. They've still got to go to United. They've actually got Everton on the last day of the season, and albeit it's Everton who is shit, Everton could be fighting for something to stay up. And at that point, I don't even think Arsenal will be in the Championship race. I genuinely think if Arsenal beat City, that's probably the best result for us because Arsenal will eventually get too distracted, get too ahead of themselves, and they will fall away. However, if City do beat Arsenal, then it's just a straight shootout between us and City.
Yeah,
I do think we do Brighton and Sheffield United as bit also, and I think it's a huge opportunity for us to overturn that goal difference, which is 7 behind Arsenal now. You know, we could be ahead of Arsenal on goal difference by the end of play with Sheffield United. You know, we can put 7 past them because they're absolutely diabolical. We could put 3 or 4 past Brighton because, as seen, Roberto De Zerbi, as much as he's touted for the Liverpool job, cannot set up a team defensively. So we'll get
on to that.
We could potentially put 9 on the board, I reckon, over the next 2 home games, and it wouldn't be a surprise.
Okay. Chief, like, similar question to yourself. I know you are in the Arsenal are like a bunch of like delicate flower sort of camp. But I'm looking at this side and I'm looking at City and I'm seeing City do things that City normally wouldn't do. You know, I'm seeing City go to Villa and get absolutely schooled. I'm seeing City do what they normally did, which was like lose away or lose at home to Spurs. Wolves, I think, is another one that sticks out. You know, these games that they can throw in, but they seem to be, and you just need to look at the points total. This is for me, this is a low points total for City at this point of the season. Like, if they win the league, they'll probably win the league with their lowest points total from any league winning season under Pep. Arsenal, for me, I don't know. I feel like they've had a few galvanizing moments, and people talked about the over celebration when they beat us. They've come through a really hard fought, two-legged tie against a Pepe led Porto in the Champions League. And to me, I don't know. I think there's parallels to us. People laughed at Klopp when he brought the team up to celebrate in front of the cup after the 2-2 draw at home to West Brom. And we now look at that as a catalyst, a key moment in the Klopp era. And I just wonder, are Arsenal now going through something similar that will make them the resilient side that they haven't been before? Because let's be honest, the talent is there within that squad.
I'm sort of somewhere between the two of you and Jay on this, in that, but I'm more with Birol on the sort of logic of I want the draw here. don't want Arsenal to win because they've already beaten City this season. They've beaten us this season. And I don't want them to get the added confidence of going to the Etihad and recording a win. Because from there, I think, you know, they... Jay's probably right. They probably will get caught up in a bit too much. And I'm not quite sure if they have enough... if they're grounded enough somehow to sort of not get carried away with something like that. But if they do beat City at the Etihad, they'll feel it's their title to lose almost.
But then again, see if you know, again, just to touch on the parallels, you know, they like lost the league in like absurd circumstances last season. The previous season they like threw away top four and
Arsenal fell away badly last season.
The last three games they blew it.
They totally choked. They lost at Everton, you know.
No, 100%. 100%. I absolutely take your point. My point is that we learned from those situations. We learned from getting battered 4-1 at Spurs. We learned from losing Champions League finals. We learned from losing league titles in agonizing circumstances. And there's nothing to say. And I think we would be we're naive to suggest that another team can't go through the same journey as Klopp's Liverpool team did.
No, I mean, because obviously we're not the first team to have gone through that journey either. Like, you know, I mean, that's what football's about. It's what
exactly
sort of great team is about. It has to build from somewhere and you have to have disappointment along the way and sort of grow from it and whatever. But and I don't deny that Arsenal have done that. Arsenal are better this season than they were last season. Points total may suggest slightly otherwise, I'm not quite sure, but this has been a tougher season. This has been a better season. The quality has been better. The competition has been better. The fact that there are three teams at the top neck and neck proves that. Last season was a little bit of a non-event in the title race, really, because nobody believed Arsenal were ever really going to win it. And in the end, they did do what everyone expected, and they did choke, and they did lose games they shouldn't have lost. And they did sort of get a bit carried away, and they did get a bit ahead of themselves, and so on. But this season, they haven't shown that, and they impressed me with their win against us, even though we handed it to them. In years gone by, that wouldn't have been enough, even what we did there in handing them the game. So that's a big one. That's why I don't want them to win. So I'm on your side on that. I do think that they are more of a threat than they were last season. But I think a draw holds both of their momentum in a way. It's something that neither of them wants from the game because they know that every point is vital at this point. I don't see City dropping points. I agree with Jay. If they don't drop points in this one, I don't see them potentially dropping points again until Spurs. And if they're on a fucking 7-match winning run by the time that is, or whenever that actually is, then the chances of them losing against Spurs diminish. So I want both of their wings clipped. I don't want either of them emerging from this feeling that they've got, you know, that they've managed to best a top four rival or a championship rival, a Premier League winning rival. And I think it's probably, as Beryl says, the most logical result because both of them drop points there. But it's more of a momentum thing. It checks both of their momentums. It halts a winning run. It may keep on beating runs going, but ultimately this is a 6-pointer, you know, and the thing that neither side ever wants in a 6-pointer is a draw.
Yeah, except for us, I guess. And like, I'm with you. I think a draw is obviously the sensible result that we all want. It's both of your title rivals dropping points. It's 4 points drop between the two of them rather than three. You can look at it that way as well. But again, Beryl, it comes back to us holding up our end of the bargain. And I think we find ourselves in a strange position in terms of squad depth. We were like this for about 15 minutes, if you remember, when we had everybody fit. But, you know, in terms of injuries, I think Jones is due back at the end of the month. Jota and Trent are due back, you know, all being well for United away, if not before. Nunez has not travelled. Whether he has travelled or not, actually, I'm not sure, but he has been either travelled and been returned to Liverpool or not travelled at all. But looks like he will be out for the international break and for no longer. Ali's still a question mark, but I think if you look at those particular three players, you know, let's start with Trent, right? Joe Gomez has been an able deputy, but so much of what he does goes through Trent, and Trent has been like turned into not just a provider and a playmaker, but a talismanic figure this season. And to have somebody like that back with that ability, that talent, that license, chomping at the bit to go and win games in the last minute, dictate the play, add that leadership, which he now has in terms of being vice captain, this is feels like it's coming at just the critical time for us.
Yeah, it's almost as if we have forgotten how good he was just before he turned out to be injured, because you know he finished the game and then afterwards we heard he was injured and then he came back and only for one half, which wasn't his best half, but yeah, he was probably injured during that half already. But I remember. You know, again in our app group, saying that he was moving into Ballon d'Or territory for me, with his, you know, with this role that you know, there are lots of teams that play with this inverted wing back or right back or left back role, but I don't think anyone does it the way he does it, because he's so able on the ball, and you know, his passing, his technique on the ball is incredible. So yeah, we missed him. It's if you think of it, you know, the not only the amount but the quality of the players that we have missed in this very important run after January, getting into January. It's incredible that we are still in the position that we are in, I just don't know where he will play. That's the only thing that I'm thinking of, because you know, I don't want Gomez to invert if Trent plays in the same team. But as you were saying, and I agree with that, Szoboszlai seemed not fit. And you know, he's a couple of weeks ahead of Trent in terms of recovery, of course. But yeah, it would be, I think, feasible that maybe that position, the right sided left, the right side midfielder, the eight role, might also be, you know, very suitable for Trent. So maybe we could see some mixing up there, because you know, Bradley has entered the scene and you know, and playing in a different way. But I've also seen him doing the inverted thing. But he's also very capable as this roaming, more traditional wing-back type of player. The combination of the two might be very interesting, I would say. So, yeah, I think Trent coming back is incredible. And I won't cut into what the others can say about the other players. But, yeah, if Jota would have been there last Sunday. Yeah, okay. I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay. Yes. Thanks for the segue, Beryl. Appreciate that, Jay. I think this is probably my big frustration over, you know, City, certainly City, and you know, probably more starkly emphasized during the second half at Old Trafford is the absence of Diogo Jota. Jota doesn't need the perfect chance to score. He doesn't need to manipulate the ideal, you know, goal scoring opportunity the way the likes of Diaz does. Listen, Nunez, unbelievable the last number of weeks. But in terms of clinicality, Jota buries almost every opportunity he gets. He is one of the most clinical finishers statistically in the entire division, and that means probably in Europe. And to have him back for this run-in, given what we've lost, which has been emphasized in the last couple of games, you know, it's I think this, he is the key for me. He's the key.
We've missed him, and it's the old saying, you don't know what you've got till it's gone.
Hold on, just remember, do you remember he went, do you remember he was injured and he came back and he went like a ridiculous number of games without scoring? And it was
about seven or eight games.
Yeah, like sell him to Newcastle for 40 million. That was the shout, do you remember?
Yeah.
And here's where we are now. Lamenting his absence in an unbelievable run of results and performances with probably our most bounteous attacking talent in the history of the fucking club, with the other four that sit alongside him.
I think what the probable difference is, you know, we were so blessed and spoiled with what we had previously in attacking talent, and they were a different type of attacking force, you know, in Firmino, Salah and Mane. And then, you know, Divock doing, you know, four games a season or something like that, where he could be bothered. Where these lads are different, and in good ways and bad ways, you know, they're completely different. But I think, you know, what we do miss is the clinicality of Jota, and that's most telling in big games. I don't think we've done very well in what would be deemed the big games, you know, against your rivals, your City, your Arsenal. You know, if you want to throw Chelsea and United in there and Spurs as well, you know, even though we're not sort of on their level at the moment in terms of where they are in the league to us. But, you know, they're your big games across the season where you've got to clean up the points, because they're capable of, as we mentioned earlier on, of taking points off others. And we just haven't done enough. You know, you look at the draws at home to United and Arsenal before Christmas, and we were all kind of feeling, though, that's dropped points. And obviously, yes, you know, there's issues with VAR in the Arsenal game and whatever. And then the City game as well at home, you just think, like, potentially, you know, there's a case for the referee at the end of the game with a penalty and whatever. But we had enough chances and we just missed that man in front of goal. And we were missing Salah as well, weren't we, for City? And, you know, as good as Salah's been, he can also be a little bit wasteful at times, where, you know, on our day, the strongest 11, we beat City, I think, and that's the kind of thing that's a little bit bugbearing, because that was their best team on the day and we just didn't have ours. But we've got to get through probably another half a dozen games, I reckon, until we probably see Jota again. But you're right in saying, you know, when the, you know, the bread and butter games come and they're handing out the trophies at the very crunch end of the season, you know, you're looking way ahead towards, like, you know, mid to end of April when he could potentially return. We may well be through to Europa League semi-final, whoever we may face. You know, obviously, this is accounting for getting past Atalanta in the next round, but, you know, semi-final, big game, potentially a final after that. You need your big players. You need that player who's going to step up when you might only get one or two chances. You know, you're looking in the league. You got West Ham away. You got Tottenham at home. You got Villa away. You got Wolves at home. Okay, Wolves at home, last game of the season. If something's on the line, we'll swat them anyway. But those three games before that, West Ham away, Spurs at home, Villa away, are potentially games that on the day are very, very tricky. And you know, you might only get a couple of chances and you want them to be falling to him. Or at the very least, you know, if you're 65, 70 minutes into a game and you've been wasteful in front of goal and you look to the bench and he's there, he's the man you're bringing on first. And not to dig out the fella who's come off the bench in the last couple of games for us in the number 18 shirt in Cody Gakpo, but he is not doing it for a multitude of reasons. And you're getting a complete opposite type of player in what they offer. But when it comes to the crunch, you know, we are going to need him. And yeah, you're right in saying, you know, it's a stark contrast from a few months gone by where, you know, people were saying you could sell this lad because, you know, he might get injured a little too often, or, you know, he's not quite consistent enough. But when he's consistent, you know, he tends to go on runs of games where he scores relentlessly, and we're going to need it. So hopefully the injury front will soon brighten up after international break, and fingers crossed we don't actually pick up any more knocks and bumps and bruises while they're away. In reference to what you said before, Darwin has just been left out by Uruguay. And Diaz has joined up with Colombia, but they play one game in London and one game in Madrid, so at least he's not got the extensive travel where he probably would have in other international breaks. The thing, this one away, I think, is Endo's going over to the Far East to represent Japan, and McAllister has gone over to the USA to represent Argentina. The rest of them are all pretty much mainland Europe.
Yeah, and look, just on the third and final one, Chase, that I want to touch on here, you know, Curtis Jones, and I think you know, that United game, and certainly extra time, and the way it becomes just a pinball game, or ping pong, whatever you want to call it, game of just, you know, Nunez doing silly things with the ball, Elliot doing silly things with the ball, you know, that game was crying out for just an element of control. And, you know, Thiago aside, who, let's be honest, might as well be like a training cone, Curtis Jones is the guy that can provide that. And that's just another facet to the squad that will allow us to maybe be a little less, you know, chaotic and gung-ho and irresponsible maybe with the ball and with their decision making, that again could be critical in the running.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big miss. He's a big miss in that midfield area. Limits our options massively, and he is the one there that, as you say, looks after the ball the most. Is quite happy to hang on to it and to slow things down when necessary, and, you know, to keep sensible possession. And it sounds like I'm damning him with fame praise, but it, as you rightly said, it's something you massively need. He brings balance as well. And yeah, it'd be great to have him back whenever he does make it. He's another one who's been unlucky this season again. He's sort of been, after seemingly getting over the big injury, which has kind of been, or the big sort of issue he's had, which has been plaguing him for a while, he's managed to pick up a few niggles this season as well. Otherwise, he would have, you know, would have featured more heavily, because I think he's been pretty much first choice when he has been available. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be great to have players back, but as Jay sort of alluded to there, they're not really coming back that soon and that quickly. And the big one for me is Ali. The quicker we can get him back, the better, because, you know, Quvain's been great, and he's been actually better than I could ever have hoped him to be. But Ali's different level, and you just feel so much more confident with him in there, and so much more, not confident perhaps, but just assured, I would say. You very rarely think that when an opposition player breaks through, or has either breaks through one-on-one, or has a shot from anything further out than sort of 12 yards, that the ball's going in. You back Alisson every time. So getting him back is massive, and I don't think the news on that is particularly promising from sort of the wee snippets that we've been getting through the WhatsApp group and stuff. So, yeah, we've been plagued, hit, swamped by injuries this season, and I don't think we're the only ones. I think it's been an epidemic around the league, across the league, and I think something's going to have to give on that score, because squads are getting bigger, but they're getting more and more threadbare every season as players drop like flies. So it's something to definitely keep an eye on. But Curtis has played a massive part this season, and it would have been great to have him to call on at the weekend. I don't think we'd have conceded some of the goals we did had he been on the pitch. I would say the same about Ali. And the sooner we can get players like that back and have a fully fit squad or close to fully fit squad, the better.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Beryl, let's just finish off. I think key news for me certainly is, you know, I think what we can only discuss is the future proofing of the club, and the ownership have come in for a lot of criticism over a number of years for a variety of different reasons. But I think recent announcements in terms of Edwards coming back in to replace Mike Gordon in his role of essentially CEO of football, not just for Liverpool, but for the FSG enterprise. And then him appointing who seemed to be a highly sought after director of football, Richard Hughes. Looks like he's going to be double jobbing for the rest of the season. Probably a handover process with whoever is going to be his replacement at Bournemouth, and also making key decisions on the appointment of the new manager. This is, it feels like the obvious thing to do, which to me, it smacks of the learnings that FSG have made, that they're not trying to be too clever and too smart. They're just going out and getting what they view as best in class and setting up a structure that hopefully will maintain the success that we've seen over the last kind of seven, eight years.
Yeah, they've learned from their experiences, I would say. This looks very methodical, and you know, they know, you know, they know who they can trust. They know what they want, and it is set up. I have to say, I wasn't aware of Hughes in any capacity. He seems to be an ex-footballer also, so yeah, he was totally new for me, but that doesn't matter. If he has been identified as someone who has the skills that you know, that are needed to perform as a, I don't know what it's called, a technical director, a sporting director, I don't care. And I think if you're at, it doesn't matter at what club you are, if you're at the Bournemouth, you probably have a list of players that you would really like to get, but you can't afford, and probably that's the list that he can try to shop in now. And I'm not sure what remains of the structure that we have at this point, because, you know, lots of people from the backroom staff, not lots, but everyone from the backroom staff was announced that they would leave with Klopp. I don't know if they will try to retain some of them. I don't know. And the scouting department was, I think Graham already left or is leaving. I'm not keeping up on that terrain, maybe as well as you know, with footballers, etc. So Ian Graham, wasn't it? He, I think he left, and he was in this Ludonautics firm as well. But, you know, never mind all of this. I think it looks very methodical, and I think they look like they know what they need to do and don't try to reinvent the game, or just get in competent people and get in a structure in which the roles are well divided. And I hope, you know, just that the next one is Xabi Alonso. That's it.
Yeah, Jay, this is bad news for you, mate. Richard Hughes did his apprenticeship. I think he was born in Italy, did his apprenticeship with Atalanta. Is like a full-scale Italian football, like, aficionado. And of the three names that are linked with Liverpool at the moment to replace Klopp, the front runners are Xabi Alonso, Ruben Amorim, and your mate, Roberto De Zerbi. How do you feel about that?
You put them in the order of preference, obviously, didn't you? And the order of quality. So, you know, you've well, answered your own question.
The order of my preference, but in terms of the order of the new director of football's preference, I don't think
he's appointing the man. He'll have a role, of course he will, but he also was part of the team at Bournemouth who appointed Adoni Iraola, and he got the same agents as Xabi Alonso. So, you know, if you're playing chess, maybe he's playing, or maybe you're playing checkers and he's playing chess, who knows? Or, you know, Michael Edwards is the one who's going to put the man in charge, let's be honest here. You know, he's been brought back with certain assurances to oversee a much bigger project than Liverpool, but Liverpool's the jewel in the crown. And, you know, we'll get into it another time, but, you know, maybe the multi-club sort of thing is what we're going to go to. And Richard Hughes is going to, you know, look oversee things at Liverpool's end, because that's a guy who Edwards has worked with at Portsmouth and trusts, clearly. But I think I've just, you know, before we, or while we've been recording, been reading, you know, that deals were set up with Hughes in January, and it was announced, you know, back then that he was leaving Bournemouth, and it's basically just crossing the I's and crossing the T's and dotting the I's, isn't it? To get it all done and dusted, and the same with Edwards. And
you got there in the end.
Yeah, it's a late night. It's been a long day. you know, to basically finalise the deal. And, you know, I'd imagine whoever our next manager is going to be, it's pretty much probably near done. But given the fact that the guys you've mentioned are all within jobs, you know, there'll be NDAs signed to basically say that things can't be announced until the end of the season. There's obviously conflict of interest in the fact that, you know, the man who's at top of the list is Xabi Alonso, and we could potentially run into him in Klopp's final game in the Europa League final, all being well. That would be a lovely scenario to have. You know, we've still got to play Brighton in the league. You know, we Sporting have dropped out of the Europa League to, you know, our next opponent, actually, Atalanta. So, you know, they've still got fish to fry in the Portuguese division. So, you know, there's a lot of things to go on in the footballing world. But the fact that wheels are in motion, you know, Edwards first, Hughes now, feels like a good time to announce in the international break, you know, while, you know, we've got a break from club football and these fellows can sort of slide into roles. And even though it says they're not starting until June, you know, Michael Edwards was in there in the Old Trafford stands at the weekend, you know, probably having a good look at players who he could maybe sell for a premium, because that seems to be his MO, even though he's not actually given the full title of the Liverpool controller. He's still going to be majorly in charge of things and probably feeding into Richard Hughes' ear of what he's meant to be doing. So I'm pretty comfortable, pretty relaxed, and, you know, we've got a few more months of Klopp left to enjoy, hopefully pleasurable ones, but it looks as though the future's in good, safe hands, and hands at FSG Trust. And actually, as a fan base, a lot of people are very, very pleased that Michael Edwards is back in charge in one capacity or another. So, you know, it does sort of ease the feeling of angst towards what the future will hold.
Yeah, and Chief, just to finish off, you know, these two they go back a long way. There's obviously a really, really solid relationship between the two of them. Both analysts at Portsmouth, you know, have worked with each other together for a long time. I think at Bournemouth, Hughes was in for the likes of Gomez, Robertson, Van Dijk before we started to sniff around, so obviously has an eye for a player. And then you've got Edwards, who is obviously key to so many, you know, smart decisions, not just signings themselves, because we can't owe it all to him, but literally setting up that entire data analytics department that have been so effective in identifying talent and recruiting players. You've just, I suppose, you know, all being well, the one final piece in the jigsaw is the manager. I suppose the one worry I have is that, you know, he bought the likes of, you know, Jordan Ibe and Brad Smith from us for like a combined about 20 million. And that might be the one worry that I have here.
Yeah, I mean, there is that for a little while, Bournemouth were the butt of all our jokes surrounding those particular players, and Dominic Solanke as well for a while, but he's proven to be to buck that trend and is now proven to be very valuable for them. Yeah, I mean, I just echo what you have said, really. Seems like the sensible move. It is a structure that we know they've wanted to get in place for a while, and sort of Klopp being the huge personality that he was, it wasn't really going to work with kind of him there. And, you know, that's one of the reasons we're sort of led to believe why Edwards kind of left in the first place. So, yeah, it seems like a smart move. They've both got proven track records. They work well together. Edwards has actually got a track record at Liverpool already. So, you know, it's a bit of a continuity candidate, even though he is coming from outside the club at this point. So why not? And obviously, you know, the next manager we hope will be Xabi Alonso, but he's certainly used to operating in this kind of structure and has been doing so at Leverkusen since moving there. So it's not anything that he'll be averse to in any way. It is a bit of a step away from what Liverpool have been, you know, associated with over the years, you know, the cult of the manager. And, you know, even though FSG have been sort of trying to bring this model in, we think from the very beginning they've sort of come up against opposition in the forms of the managers that they've appointed, with the likes of Rodgers first and then Klopp. Meaning that they've never actually been able to get this full sort of director of football, general manager kind of thing in place, you know, the German model, really. And now it seems that this is their time, this is their juncture, and they're gonna establish that. So it will be, you know, a bit of a departure from what we've been used to, but it seems to be the way that football is generally going, and has gone, in fact, in certainly in many other countries, and even within the Premier League, a lot of teams now operate with this structure. So they seem to be good candidates. They seem to be highly, you know, obviously Edwards we know, and Richard Hughes seems to be very highly thought of. So yeah, it's a positive step, and you know, now that they've sort of been confirmed, it sort of just leaves that one final piece to be slotted in, and hopefully it is the man from Spain.
Yeah, all agreed here. All right, listen, lads, thanks for joining me. Until next time, up the Chango can drink fuck all and can't order a taxi, Reds.